Are you a Mary or are you a Martha? Now, men, you can think about this too. It's not just for the women. It's kind of sad that we've relegated this text that we're going to read here in just a minute just to women's Bible studies. And so that's one reason why I want to talk about it. I thought I was being really original. And I used to introduce this sermon a little bit different way. And so I said, I've never heard a sermon on this text from Luke 10. And then right after I preached it, I got onto Westside and Irving's website where Mark Roberts preaches, and he had almost the identical sermon. So I feel like I need to tell you, I didn't copy Mark if you happen to see this sermon from him. Are you a Mary or are you a Martha? Now, don't get too far ahead of yourself and think carefully about how you're going to answer this. Because the text we're going to read here in Luke 10 might give you one idea about these two women. But you should also remember the text in John 11. In John 11, did you know that she is the one who utters the confession? You know, in Matthew and Mark and Luke, Peter is the focus of this confession. In the middle of those Gospels, Jesus is asking the apostles, who do men say that I am? And eventually, Peter says, you are the Christ, or you are the Son of the living God. The various Gospels report it in different ways. But it's interesting that in John 11, the story of Lazarus, her brother's death, when Jesus goes to Martha's house in this story and interacts with her, she has an amazing insight into God's plan and who Jesus is, even to the point that she's the one who utters the confession, you are the Christ, the Son of God. We need to realize that Martha is a wonderful character of faith. And I think for that reason, it makes this story even that much more powerful. Read with me in Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10, beginning in verse 38. So good to be with you this evening. We have a lot of visitors with us tonight. I'm so glad that you've come to be here. You're a great testimony to the sort of thing we're going to talk about tonight, actually, that you've chosen to do something that is spiritually focused, to be among brethren. And I really commend you for that. And I'm glad that you're interested in studying the Word of God. So thank you for being here and being a part of what we're doing tonight. Begin reading with me in Luke chapter 10 and verse 38. Now as they were traveling along, he entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her home. She had a sister called Mary who was seated at the Lord's feet listening to his words. But Martha was distracted with all her preparations, and she came up to him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the serving alone? Then tell her to help me. But the Lord answered and said to her, Martha, Martha, you are worried and bothered about so many things, but only one thing is necessary. For Mary has chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away from her. Just a short text, but a very powerful text. And tonight I want us to talk about the idea of choosing that which is best in God's kingdom. It's not just about choosing good things, making good choices, but it's about making the best choices we can in life. Sometimes I think we make this false division in life, that we have some good things here and then we have the bad things. And that's what life is about. It's about making good choices or making bad choices. And that black and white sort of thinking, this easy type of thinking, we can make ourselves feel very good about the decisions that we make. Yeah, I came to church tonight. I gathered with saints. That's a good choice. Things are going well. Or I realize I sinned earlier. That's a bad choice. And so life seems so simple when we just set it up in those terms. But we all know deep down and we all realize that life is not that easy. And that our choices are not that easy. In fact, the easiest choices of all in life are between good and evil. Those are the easy ones. We look at something and realize that's evil. Maybe I'm enticed to do it. I would really like to do it, but I know it's wrong and I'm not going to do it. Or I know this is good and know this is right, and so this is what I want. Those are the easy choices. What is much harder in life is when we have to choose between things that are good. I believe Luke set this story up the way he did as he's bringing out this narrative to bring it right after the Good Samaritan. It's really important when we read through the Gospels that we understand that they're stories, that they're writing these in a narrative format. And so the way they do things sometimes is very purposeful in terms of how they order the stories. Keep in mind, just before this encounter, where Jesus comes before Martha and Mary and has this interaction with them, he has just told the story of the Good Samaritan. And what is the point of the story of the Good Samaritan? What is the good thing that the Samaritan did? Well, while the priest and the Levite likely are going off to do their duties, you know, the priest, he wants to stay ceremonially clean, and the Levite, he doesn't want to defile himself, and likely that there's some point Jesus is making there about them going for some temple service or going to do some kind of religious activity. That what made the Good Samaritan good was what? He stopped and he served. And he brought this poor man to the inn, and he paid for him to be cared for, and he took care of him. It was service. It was service that made the Good Samaritan so good. And then we get this puzzling story in the next few verses where service seems to be so bad. But what Martha is doing is a very good thing. What is pointed out in this text, she's being hospitable. Hospitality is extremely important in the first century. It's extremely important now. We are called to be hospitable. But I want you to think about this. If I go through some town tomorrow and I needed to stop somewhere and I didn't know anybody in that town, I could stop and stay in a hotel. I could find restaurants to eat at. I would have no issue taking care of myself. That would not be a problem. But you remember in Genesis 18 when those men are coming through the desert and they encounter Abraham. Abraham is going to go out to them. He tells Sarah to prepare a meal for them. Why is this? That's all they have. There's no other option. They're relying on the hospitality of the people that they come across. And that's why it's seen as such a vile and evil thing when people in that kind of society and culture, whether it's the ancient Near East or the Old Testament or even the first century, when they're not hospitable to strangers. That's seen as such a terrible thing. And so Martha, she's doing a really good thing here. She wants to bring Jesus in and she wants to take care of him. Even a vital thing, we would say, to life. But in this setting, and at this time, Jesus says, it's not the right choice. She's missing the good part. There are all kinds of things in this text that we could investigate further that I don't want to do tonight. For instance, there are some who talk about the fact that women could not be disciples, and so this is odd for Mary to sit at Jesus' feet. And I think there might be some things we could do with that. That's not that much what I'm interested in, though. What I really want us to talk about is, why is it that sometimes we miss the good part? Why is it that sometimes we choose what is good rather than what is best as people who are in God's kingdom? I believe this story opens up our eyes to some reasons why this happens. And it's not just for women. It's not just things that women do. These are things that we do as well, men. And it's just housed in this story about Martha and Mary. And it's something that's beneficial to all of us. So what is it that's keeping us from missing the good portion? I want to talk about four things tonight. Four things that are talked about in this text that are important to understand for us to realize what it means to choose what is best. In this interaction with Martha, Jesus comes, he's in her house. She has some prominence here, we might note. This is her house. It's mentioned that way. And so she feels the need to care for him. But the reality is, what Jesus notices about her in this situation is, the reason she's missing what is best in life is because she is distracted. She's distracted. And Luke notes that. Mary comes and she sits at Jesus' feet. She wants to listen to him. She wants to interact with him. But Mary, she's distracted. And of course, Jesus is going to point this out a little bit later as well. She's so focused on things that are not as important as sitting there with Jesus and listening to his words, the words of life. And she feels like serving is such an important thing to do. Now listen, there's some important things here, ladies. Which of you can say you've never done this? You have people in your home, they're all there visiting, and you really feel the need and the obligation to be getting everyone's drinks and to be serving the whole time. And I think we do value that. And I have great respect for women who are doing that. They want everything in their home to be just right. But you know what? I also have a lot of respect for the woman who sits down and talks with everybody in her house. Who says, hey, you want a drink of water? There's the refrigerator over there. You can go get some ice and water in it. That's okay. Sometimes there's things that are more important than the serving. Sometimes there's things that are more important than answering that email for work, men. When we're talking with people, maybe we're in a very good discussion, whether it's a religious discussion or just learning more about each other. This can be a big distraction where we pull our phone out or we've got to go off to another room and we've got to get on a computer and maybe we get distracted by some things and we miss out on some things that are so much better in life. What about school? I just spent a lot of time in school. I'm so glad I'm done. But I know some others are in school. You have some tough choices. There's a lot of work to be done. And it's important. Remember, these are good or best. We're not talking about bad and good. We're talking about things that are good. And we have to make choices between what's good and what's best. And sometimes we fail in those decisions. There are times when I should have been spending time with my kids and I was reading a book. And we look back at those moments and we realize we weren't making the right decision. I really didn't need that extra 5 minutes. I could have gone out with my son and thrown a ball. All these decisions, they matter in life. Everything in life relates to our faith. But sometimes we get mixed up with this idea that spiritual things and secular things are different. And there just could be nothing that's more erroneous than that. Spending time with my child is a very spiritual thing, even if he just wants me to play a game. Spending time with my wife, that's a very religious and spiritual thing. It's important for our marriage. It's important for our kids to see that. It's important for our relationship. It's important for everything that relates to our faith. If we are married, we better be making time for that relationship. And sometimes we have two good things that we have to choose between. But it can be so easy to be distracted. I like what Paul says in Colossians 3:15. In fact, I think I preached on this when I was here a few years ago. When he uses this phrase, let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts. That's such a powerful thought. The idea is that the peace of Christ, it's calling the shots in our hearts. That we have to use discretion. We have to use wisdom. And what stands behind that is our knowledge of God through Scripture. Our desire to follow His will. And really thinking about the kinds of choices that we're making. And it's not always easy. I don't know what was going through Jesus' mind when he brings up the example of the priest and the Levite. He clearly is showing in that story that the priest made the wrong choice. But you know that priest, as he's going to the temple, he's got a lot of things to think about. There's a lot of people depending on him. He's got some religious service he's doing, and I'm not being sarcastic here, I'm being real about what I'm talking about. This is not an easy choice for him to make, and we've experienced this as well. We've got a job to get to, or we want to be at Bible class, or we want to be at assembly, and maybe there's some conflict, maybe there's some difficulty, and we, at that moment, we have to make this choice between something that's good and something else that's good. We have to try to decide what's better, and we can't just open our Bible and turn to some verse that says, you should go to assembly rather than stopping and helping this person. It's not there. That's what Jesus is recognizing. What he's saying is sometimes choices are hard. And we've got to use wisdom and discretion that we gain from our understanding of God and His will, understanding of who God is, to try to help us make the best choice we can make, to let the peace of Christ call the shots in our heart, to rule in our heart. And that's not always going to be a book, chapter, and verse sort of thing. Sometimes it is based on principles in Scripture, but it comes from good judgment. The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. And we understand that we should fear God and respect Him. That filters down to the decisions that we make. And in this moment, Martha thinks she should be serving, but what she really needs to be doing is sitting there and listening to Jesus, who is there to proclaim the gospel, to preach the kingdom of God.
And in this moment, at least, Mary gets it. She's the one that realizes where her focus really needs to be, while Martha is distracted with something that's so much less significant. We can do this with our hobbies. We become so focused on teams we like to watch, or sports we like to play, or crafts or activities that we like to do, that somehow they become dominant over our faith and our spirituality. We let that take precedence over things that are so much more important. Listen, there's nothing wrong with playing soccer or baseball. There's nothing wrong with doing band. There's nothing wrong with playing golf or liking to hunt or any of these type of hobbies. Those are good things. Sometimes they're much needed things. Sometimes we need some time away from the other things that we do in life. But sometimes we allow them to distract us from what is the better thing. And when we do that, we're being like Martha. We're missing the good part. But really, it goes well beyond that in this text with Martha. She is very distracted, and that's noticed in a few different ways in this text. But she really takes it to the next level when she comes and she addresses Jesus. She wants Jesus to fix this terrible problem and predicament that she is in, because Mary is so thoughtless about what she's doing and she won't help her. And you notice the wording she says here. She comes to Jesus and she says, "Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to do all the serving alone? Don't you see what's going on here, Jesus? Mary is sitting over here being lazy, not doing anything. I'm having to do all the work. I'm having to take care of everything." So sometimes we miss the good part because of self-pity. Because of selfishness. Because of self-focus. Countless times I have seen this problem. I'm not very old, in my opinion at least. There are those of you who are older than I am who I believe have seen this more frequently than I have. You have the person who won't come to church anymore because people are hypocrites, or because somebody made a statement to them that they didn't like, or someone else believed something about some passage that they didn't believe in, so now they're upset. That is self-pity. That is victimizing ourselves, and that is making everything about me. Do you not care, Jesus? Don't you care that this person, they disagree with me and they don't see things the way I see it? Don't you care what they're saying about me? Shouldn't you be fixing this problem, elders or men or people of the congregation? Don't you see what's happening here? And when we get to this point, when we get in this mindset, it's really hard for us to realize that there might be things that are more important than what I think. Don't you see Martha there? You know, she's busy around her house, serving, taking care of Jesus, making food for his disciples, walking around him, trying to take care of all these things. And she looks over and there is Mary. She has the gall to sit down. Can you believe that? Don't you care, Jesus? Martha should know her place. She should be up here serving with me. But she has left me to serve all alone. I think Martha feels that. I don't think it's an excuse. I don't think she's trying to concoct some sort of thing, as I believe sometimes is happening with people who don't want to be a part of a congregation and are trying to come up with reasons why they're not serving the Lord the way they should. But sometimes it is very real for them too. Sometimes they have been wrong. Sometimes someone has said something to them that really hurt them. And rather than take care of it, they go into this self-pity sort of state where they think nobody understands them. Nobody realizes what I'm going through. Nobody could possibly fathom the sort of hurt I've had in my life. And so I'm going to reject everything. I'm going to reject religion, even though Jesus said we should have it. Even though Jesus said, I'm going to build my congregation. Forget what Jesus said. I'm hurt by people, so I'm not going to come anymore. No one understands me. Do you not care? Listen, that's self-pity, and that'll do no good for anyone. And one of the surest ways to make sure that we do not make the best choice in life is to turn ourselves into a victim and to disengage. And to think somehow, even though this is ludicrous and ridiculous, that no one else can understand me and what I'm going through. I think when we are in touch with our brethren and with the congregation, what we will quickly find out is that there are a lot of people who can understand me and what I'm going through. Maybe they haven't gone through exactly the same thing, although I would say it's pretty likely that someone has gone through something very similar, at least, to whatever I'm going through or someone else is going through. And Mary is sitting here listening to Jesus, and Martha is hurt by this. She thinks she's making the wrong choice. She thinks she's wronging her. And so she's hurt by it. And she wants Jesus to fix her problem. How many times have we seen someone that runs to the elders and wants them to fix their problem for them with somebody else? Or they've gone to some other man or woman. They want them to fix their problem with somebody else. And of course, it is cast in the worst sort of light. Do you not care what they're doing to me and what they said to me? Don't you see it from my perspective? Tell them to stop. That's what Martha does. Did you notice that? She tells Jesus what to do. Tell her to help me, says at the end of verse 40. Man, that is almost a rebuke. But she has got herself into such a state of self-pity where she feels like she's all alone that now she was telling the Lord how to handle her situation. I don't know all the solutions to these sorts of problems, and I realize everyone has moments and days where they don't feel right and they don't feel good. They're hurt by something and they're upset by something else. But I'll tell you, the answer is not disengaging from the people of God and going somewhere else. The answer is not neglecting to do what Jesus has said, which is to be a part of his assembly and his congregation. The answer is just the opposite. It is to fall at Jesus' feet like Mary was doing. It is to give our full attention to him and do the things he has told us to do, to try to get over our self-pity and our victimization, and to realize sometimes we are hurt and sometimes we are upset, but there are things that are more important than life than me. And I'll just stop for just a second and say this. I've been married for quite a while now. And ladies, I want to deal with this very carefully, but I think it's important. I believe many times when you are hurt by something someone has said, they did not mean it the way you think they meant it. You hear it in your mind and you think they've said it a certain way, and you think that they're not your friend, or you think that they're upset with you, or they're trying to say something negative about you. And I just don't think it is the case many times. Sometimes it is. And sometimes people are trying to be hurtful. But you know what? People, for the most part, among our brethren are good people. And so I think it's a better idea to give people the benefit of the doubt. And men, we just don't talk about it. We just go on and don't deal with our emotions. So that's another topic. But you know, I've been there and I've listened to these sorts of things, whether it's my wife or other women. And so often it's misunderstanding. A few days later, I hear the other side of the story and realize, oh, it wasn't what I thought it was. So my suggestion is to try to think positively first and not go to the state of self-pity, because so often it's just not the right thing anyway. And we're misunderstanding what was said. Man, we can do the same thing too. But we need to be just as careful about how we're hearing things. Now, this happens, from my experience at least. I grew up in Vermont. We had business meetings, men's meetings. I've been in churches that have elderships. And all these, this happens in more business-type situations where we get upset at things people said and plans they have and things that they would like to do, and they don't understand the things we understand. And so we get kind of an ego, and we think that our ideas are the best, and we kind of get upset, but we won't really talk about it very often. But we get upset about it, and so we'll tell our wives and we'll tell other people, listen, that doesn't help anything. And thinking that we're all alone and nobody understands and nobody cares. It is not at all what Jesus is talking about in Philippians 2 when he tells us to think about others through the hand of Paul, to have the mind of Christ, to put others before ourselves. And so we need to get over this idea, which is so common in our culture, which is part of the problem in society, this idea of victimization and making ourselves seem like we're ignored and we're not cared about. We miss so many good things because of our own self-pity. And let's just be honest about this. I've been there, you've been there, and we realize afterwards that this is true, don't we? We think back about it. No, I'm not going to go with you to this party or this get-together. I just don't want to be there. And then we realize later that was just ridiculous. And all it does really is hurt us and hurt others. And we're missing out on so many good things. Well, how do we miss what is best? We've talked about things like victimization and self-pity, about being distracted. But in Jesus' answer, he gives us a really precise, I think, detail about how we so often miss what is good or what is best. When she appeals to him and she tells him to take care of this, you go tell Mary, she needs to be helping me. Jesus stops her. The Lord answers, Martha, you are worried and bothered by so many things. Now, husbands, I don't suggest you say this to your wife. Really bad mistake. But you can turn here and read it from the Bible. A few chapters earlier, in Luke 8, when he is telling a parable, in verse 14, this is the parable of all parables, the parable of the sower. This is what he says about that third soil. The seed which fell among the thorns, these are the ones who have heard, they've heard the word. And as they go on their way, they are choked with worries. That third soil. Now there are other things that choke them as well. Forbidden pleasures, cares of the world, riches. But the first one's all we need here for this point. Just a few chapters before this, Luke says, there are these four soils, and the third of them, they're a lot like us when we're not doing the right thing, right? The word falls, we know the word, we receive it, we believe the word, but because of the worries and the cares of the world, we allow the word to be choked out. And not that the first two soils can't be a danger to us, to people like us who are in a building like this, but that third soil is really a big danger and risk. Because we get so caught up in the things that we're doing and the things that he mentions here. And that's exactly what he's telling Martha. He says, you are so worried and bothered by things that just don't matter that much. You've allowed yourself to be anxious. Anxiety or worry, it destroys faith. That's what he's saying in the parable of the sower. It destroys spirituality. It destroys things that are so much more important in life. And that's what he's trying to help Martha see. Martha, she's so upset about this, and she wants this problem to be taken care of. And this can be true of any problem. It's not just this circumstance. It's when we think we've been wrong, we think there's some problem in life, and we want it to be fixed and taken care of, and we think it's the most important thing in life. And how could anyone not realize how important this is? We've let it get to us, and it's been ruminating in our mind, and it's been building up, and we've become bitter about it. It happened like that with Martha, didn't it? Sometimes it can happen that way. Sometimes it takes a long time, and it happens over a lengthy period of time. But what Jesus tells Martha is you're missing so much because you worry and are bothered by so many things. Now, there are a lot of directions I think we can go with this tonight. But I want to talk about a couple things that I think are important right now. All you have to do is look at social media, Facebook, if you have that. Many of you I know are on that. I'm friends with some of you on there. Or just listen to the news. And we can allow ourselves to be worried by so many things. A long time ago, I decided I'm just not going to be bothered by political garbage anymore. The people in the world are going to do what the people in the world do. And they're against the people of God. They're not interested in doing things the way the people of God want to do them. And so rather than letting myself be bothered and worried and concerned and be made anxious about this and about that, about that decision and this vote that went through and this person who is in some position representing this state, you know what? I just have very little interest in that. And it's okay if you are interested in that. That's just my own choice. But what I do want to say it is that it is wrong and we are missing so much if we allow that to dominate our life. We allow that to become so important to us and we get so anxious and worried and bothered and we think it's going to be the end of the world because of some vote in the Supreme Court or the House of Representatives. This is just going to change everything. It's going to ruin our lives. There's a lot of alarmism in the world. And when I do read things from the media, what I've realized is there's also just a lot of hype and a lot of talk and a lot of people out there that have to come up with an article to get paid. And that doesn't mean that there's no concerns and that there isn't anything bad happening, because that certainly is true. But when I have to make choices in my life between what I'm going to do, whether I'm going to get focused on politics or civil things, or whether I want to think about the things of God, I want to think over here. I want my mind to be focused and set on things above, not on things of the earth. That's what Paul tells us to do in Colossians chapter 3. And I'm not suggesting that you can have no part in politics or that you can't vote or anything like that. That's not the point at all. But it's that we don't allow ourselves to be so worried about it, so bothered by it, that it ruins our day, or that it ruins our interactions with our brethren. There's nothing that could be worse than that. It's fine to talk about it in conversation and to have some general worries about these issues, but that's a lot different than anxiety, than true worry and concern, which I see so often, especially among some who just, it's constant on their news feeds. If you're not on Facebook and you don't have Facebook, you might not know what I'm talking about, but they're just posting things and they're sharing things constantly about political things and these various, just don't let it ruin your life. There are things that are so much more valuable than becoming anxious or worried about that. Martha allowed herself to just think very negatively of Mary. Really, to an extreme, Mary's doing something good. She's listening to Jesus. She's sitting at his feet. But because it doesn't fit Martha's worldview of how things should be, she's now looking down on her sister. She's despising what she's doing. And I don't know that their relationship was bad all the time. I don't think it was. It was probably very good. But in this moment, at least, she's very upset, and she's trying to appeal to Jesus to fix this monumental problem in her life. And what she doesn't understand is she's just allowing things to worry and bother her that she shouldn't. Sometimes we do that with things like finances. Again, if we're honest, I think we would say we've all been there. Now, maybe for some, you haven't been there in a long time. And it's hard for us to remember. I look at some of the younger couples that I know who are just starting their lives together. And it's hard for me to remember that. It hasn't even been all that long. It's 12 years. I've been married 12 years. Some of you, that's nothing. But when I think about what we were doing when we first got married and where we lived and how much money we made and all those sorts, I can't even imagine that anymore. And yet some bill comes up and it worries me for a few minutes or even longer. Again, we have these concerns and there are problems that come up in life. And it's not that we just ignore them or don't do anything with them. But the reality is we miss so many good things because of our lack of perspective. And that's really what all of this culminates in. whether it's the distraction or the self-pity or the worry and anxiety, what it really comes down to, and Jesus emphasizes this point at the end, it is a lack of perspective. That's why sometimes we choose something that might be good or even sometimes things that are bad rather than what is best in life. It's why we tell ourselves stories about what's going on in life that really aren't that accurate. We fall into this self-pity and we disengage and we don't do what's really best in life. It's because our lack of perspective is killing us. Jesus says this to Martha. He says, "You're worried and you're bothered about so many things, but only one thing is necessary." Only one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good part. And this last part may be the most powerful of all. Shall never be taken away from her. I don't care how bad your health is, or how much debt you're in, or any of that sort of thing. Those things are problems of this life. And they might cause us heartache, and they might cause us problems, and we might have to fight through those and deal with them and struggle through things of this life. But that's the point, it's this life. And what Mary's doing, and this is what Jesus is recognizing, what Mary's doing is of an eternal nature. She's getting the words of life. She's listening to Jesus, who's going to offer eternal life, who's going to bring her into his kingdom, and that kingdom's going to be forever. Your health problems aren't going to be forever. Your money problems aren't going to be forever. The interpersonal problems that sometimes we have with people, those aren't going to be forever. This is only temporary. And we all know that intellectually. If I were to walk up to you and I was to ask you about these sort of things, you could give me all the right answers. Couldn't you? But it's not how we feel sometimes, is it? As we experience the difficulties of life and we have to make choices, sometimes very hard choices, it doesn't feel as simple as it might seem. From an intellectual standpoint, it's not so black and white anymore. Just like that priest and the Levite walking down the road deciding what they're going to do, it's not as easy as I think sometimes we might imagine to make that choice. Or Martha, as she's sitting there with the Lord in her house, that's not such an easy choice. Am I going to serve him and take care of him, or am I going to go sit and talk to him? We know because we're looking back on it. We see the story. We see how it's told. And so we can make that choice now. But listen, are you a Mary or are you a Martha? I hope that we're struggling just a little bit with that question. Not because I want us to make wrong choices or I want us to not choose the good part, but because I want us to be honest. Because I think the first step in trying to make the best choice as kingdom citizens, as people in God's kingdom, is being honest about where we are. And that sometimes the easiest choice isn't always the best. You know, it can happen in ways that we would not even expect. I'm going to leave here Friday and head home. And when I get home, I've been away from my family for over a week. You know, it would be a really, really poor decision on my part if someone called me on my way home and said, "I want to get together and study the Bible with you," to say, "Okay, let's get together." Those of you who preach, I think you can understand this. Those of you who are older, who have kids especially, can grasp this idea. And you know the history about the reality of so many preachers' children who have struggled with the fact that their parents haven't been around. Or their father's been gone so often. How could having a Bible study not be the best choice? Because my children are important. And my wife is important. And that would not be an easy choice. What if you have somebody who's on the precipice of deciding to give their life to Christ? I know they're almost there, and they really want to talk to me. And I've been away from my family for a week. And my son and my daughter and my wife, they're waiting for me to come home. What's most important in that moment?
What does that even mean in that decision? Because Jesus tells us here, and he tells us with the Good Samaritan. But there's nowhere in Scripture he's going to tell me how to make that choice. Or how to make some of the choices that you'll have to make in life. And what we have to realize is, what we have to think is, what is the best choice, not what is a good choice. Sometimes they're both good. But I think in that moment I would choose to go be with my family. And I might call somebody else and say, go talk to that person. Because I want my kids and I want my wife to know they're more important than my work. And I want to save my kids' souls, not just everybody else's souls. You might disagree with me on that. But that's the sort of thing I'm talking about. It takes some thought, and it takes some wisdom, and it takes some discernment. Sometimes it takes thinking about the perspective that we're looking at something from, and something that might seem so good in the moment might not really be the best choice. And that's what Jesus is trying to help Martha see. It wasn't because Martha was doing something so bad, or she was being neglectful, or she wasn't being a good host, or anything like that. She was doing what was typically expected when you take care of somebody. But at that moment, it wasn't the right choice. There might be a lot of things going on in your life right now that need some attention. Maybe you have some decisions to make about work or about family. But I know this. If your life is broken right now and you're not right with God, there is no other decision that is more important than that. I don't care what it is. I don't care if you've worked 70 hours this week and you are sleep deprived, you haven't seen your kids, you haven't seen your wife. If you're not right with God and you leave this building, that is the wrong choice. Because there's nothing more important in life. There's no better decision than giving your life to Jesus Christ. There's no better decision than rededicating yourself if you've fallen off, if you haven't been living the way that you're supposed to live. There's nothing that's more important. If you're not right with God right now, your job's not more important. Your family's not more important. There's nothing, absolutely nothing more important if you are not standing in a right relationship with God right now. Don't let the moment pass. If you need Christ in your life at this moment, we'll help you do that. He tells us how we can do it. We repent. We turn away from our sin. We give our life to Him. We're baptized into Christ for the remission of our sin. And we come up out of the water and we live a new life, a transformed life, trying to live after His image. Can we help you do that tonight? If we can, why don't you come while we stand and be saved?